That is it. That is disgusting. Look at that. It's called a bezoar. A bezoar is a tightly packed collection of partially digested or undigested material that can become stuck in the stomach.
Is that from an animal or
no,
a human?
No, it's a human.
Oh, sis.
Yes, so it's like a pre-turd. That's the only way only way I can describe it, really. And if you're not looking at the screen, then you're lucky. Because it looks like it could be bits of hair and, I don't know, machine grease. Who knows? Who knows what that thing's made out of?
There's everything in there, marine oil.
It is disgusting. And, you know, for me to find something that is so disgusting that we've never talked about it before, I thought that was a major, major win. Jeez. I was like, I can't wait. I was so excited. I was like, can't wait for Leanne to see something absolutely appalling.
Because I usually bring the disgusting stuff.
I know. This is so gross.
No, that's
a bezoar.
I can imagine that happening in an animal that licks itself and that has fur or that eats other animals. Like, you know, when a dog eats a bird whole and it's got beaks and feet in it. Then I can imagine that happening.
Bezoar. Isn't it a terrible name as well, right?
It is.
So what happened to Judith? Oh, she got bezoar.
It was the bezoar.
She's
like, got her.
Oh, really? A what? Oh, no. A bit. We don't like to talk about it, but she had a bezoar.
It's a pre-shit.
Yeah, she had a pre-turd and yeah, kind of got stuck and they had to cut her open and take it out. It was pretty filthy and revolting.
Bezoar. Few doctors passed out from the smell.
Bezoar. All right. Very, very good. Okay. So from one disgusting thing to another. So this extremely fat girl went missing and her cousin made this plea. So basically, I mean, it's quite a long video, but it's fantastically authentic. You know, I just love people who are not afraid to say what the real story is. Mm. And here it is from her cousin. She just desperately wants her to come home for a number of reasons, which she lays out absolutely perfectly. So I am totally sympathetic with this cousin about her fat cousin who's gone missing.
Come home. My cousin has been missing for 3 days now. Me and my family, we've been out here in the woods looking for her. We've been looking everywhere for her. Yeah, but my thing is, my family is telling everybody that she may have gotten kidnapped. She weighed over 300 pounds. When have y'all ever seen somebody over 300 pounds get kidnapped? Who, come on now, who fighting her and put her in the car? Nobody. I'm tired, it's hot outside. She probably somewhere. I keep telling them, she keep trying to be a foodie, one of the mukbangers type things. All they gotta do is check every restaurant, but instead we out here checking the woods. The train tracks, we checking everywhere. The boyfriend don't know where she at. He don't care about where she at. He don't even like her. I like him. I like her boyfriend, so I know he not stunned her. We just need her to come home because she left this, and we gotta sit here and take care of this. It's cute and all, be there, right, mama? But she need to come get a dog. How you leave a whole dog? That's like leaving your kids, and you know I don't like kids. But let me say something to her, Brianna. If you are not back,
Brianna,
if you are not home in 3 days, I'm keeping this dog. I'm keeping her. She made my face itchy and everything. We got a little bag for her because she don't like to walk around. She probably done tried to eat the dog. Ain't no telling, ma'am. But we just need her to come home. I want her to come home.
That is so brilliant.
Don't you love her?
I love her.
She's amazing.
So much.
She's the greatest. I never seen no 300-pound girl be kidnapped. Who fighting her and putting her on a car? I love it. Damn, she's good.
Wow.
All right. So apparently, Leanne has another disgusting story for us. This is about people going to the opera. Now, you might not be a big opera fan. I'm not. But this is something else. Because apparently these people who went to the opera... Yeah, a certain kind of person goes to the opera. It's usually sophisticated, smart people who enjoy a very refined form of
performance.
So what happened?
So the headlines all over have been that opera guests have been throwing up and fainting.
Bez was.
Inside the theater.
Yeah.
Watching this X-rated performance.
X-rated?
Yes.
An opera that's X-rated?
Yes.
What with the...
All the thrusting, all the banging.
Oh, wow. So they actually...
Real sex on stage.
In an opera?
Yes. Not only real sex, but real lesbian sex. Now, this thing
and
sounds...
And it made people throw up?
This thing sounds absolutely... No, the audience was throwing up. The audience was fainting and they couldn't handle what they were seeing.
No.
That's apparently how bad it is. Now, this show exists. It was first composed in 1921 back in Stuttgart, Germany.
Yeah.
And now it's come back and, you know, they've obviously made it a little more interesting. But it's a religious explorative orchestration. And it doesn't seem like there were 12 people, right, who had to be attended to medically.
After an opera.
Okay, so you tell me how this sounds. Live lesbian sex, real and fake blood.
I know people who would be very happy to see that, actually.
Real and fake blood used.
But you're not sure which is which.
A crude oral act involving a crucifix sword. Apparently got too much for the front row viewers. There was a radical version of a holy mass.
Where the hell has this happened, by the way?
Germany.
Okay.
And that, Gareth, I thought you might enjoy.
Dwarf priest.
That is an actress with dwarfism, dressed as a nun. And she gets
not a nun.
She gets swung around.
Nuns don't dress like that.
It's more like a pope, isn't it?
Yeah, she's dressed like the pope, and she's
and
a dwarf.
She gets swung around on a mechanical arm.
Maybe that's where the vomiting came from. Huh? Wow.
It's a bit of a wild ride.
That was an opera?
Yes.
And in Germany, they used to very weird stuff, so I'm surprised any of them had that reaction.
Apparently, they didn't know what they were letting themselves in for.
Wow. So
they didn't think... Susanna, the main character, would lower her loincloth and get busy with herself.
Jesus.
Oh, in one particular scene, a nun could be seen pleasuring herself with a cross. Another performer has their skin cut off and grilled medium rare.
I think it's gone a bit far.
I think it's gone a little bit too far.
Yeah, I think somewhere in the beginning of this description, I went, not ready for me.
One more description that I have to get through. Other cast members we're seeing hanging from inside of hells with their rear ends on show. And another scene saw an actress portraying Jesus spanking a semi-naked nun on roller skates.
I mean...
It's completely wild. It's so wild.
I don't know what these people are trying to achieve. I think this is very bad.
So the show's description states, some aspects of the evening may cause discomfort for certain individuals, and for others, they may be even re-traumatizing.
Well, Dirk says, if the Germans find this revolting, then it must have been off-the-scale hectic, right?
I mean, it sounds absolutely bizarre.
Proper gender says, was Rammstein in the orchestra? Unbelievable.
So the company behind this opera has since... you know, spoken out after this backlash.
Yeah, I should hope so. What did they say?
They said, look, the reason why these people needed medical attention is something of a bit of a common, it's a common occurrence. It's because the seating's quite close together and the venue's quite small. So sometimes people get lack of oxygen and so they start fainting.
Oh, what a lot of nonsense. What, like people are doing this in La Traviata? Come on, do me a favor.
They said also it's a 2-hour, 45-minute show without a break.
That's a long show.
So they say that's why, because some people didn't eat properly.
A long show of horrific things.
Some people hadn't eaten properly, and so they were fainting.
Yeah, and it's not often that you and I go, maybe it's gone a bit far. You know? I mean, that should be all you need to know. It's gone a bit far. I think that's enough. What a horrific... I mean, I would be incensed, and I'm not even religious.
My gosh.
Doesn't it feel to you like some people...
Just that you know, it's called Sancta Susanna.
Oh.
And it's originally by Florentina Holtzinger.
Yeah, I don't like it. Okay, I'm not going to go. Opera peeps are usually fat. This could not have been nice. Very few people throw up with good-looking lesbian porn. Very good point. Yeah, I was it the hair that was upsetting people? It's not Paganini, it's Peganini. Instant punishment for these people. Watch that, and the people who watch that crap. Do you want front row seats at such a show? Hell no, it sounds revolting. Okay, these artists love being disgusting and they call it art. Listen, it's the same as those people who they go to some show where there's a painting, but it's not a painting, it's a banana that's been taped to a piece of wood. Mm-hmm. And they go, oh, it's tremendous art. I'm so impressed with this. It's so beautiful. It's so different. It's so novel. It's so creative. And they pay thousands of dollars for it. You need your head red. You must be fucked in the head to find that stuff entertaining or amusing. And the same goes for this. And I can't believe that I sound as conservative as I do.
Very close-minded.
Who's doing it? Who are they doing this for? And I want to see them do that, but I want them to see to do it with, instead of like ripping Christianity, which has been there, done that.
Mm.
Do it with Islam. You see how brave you really are. Go on. Let's see how you do then. See if you do that with Muhammad. See how well that works out for you.
Yeah.
Try that. See how many people come back to your show for the next grand opening. We'll see how many of your artists are brave enough to do all that stuff then, huh? You want to be brave and courageous? There, I've given you an idea. Use it. See how well that goes for you.
Mechanical arms and skateboards. Yeah.
Yeah, well, you'll need a mechanical arm and you'll be rolling yourself around on a skateboard if you know some of those other oaks come around there and say, hey, what did you say about Muhammad? It'll be the end of your story. Tell you what.
Mm.
Okay, so dear Linda says, no balls for that. Yeah, absolutely. I like that guy who put his one shoe as a display in a gallery and filmed people admiring it. They didn't even know that it wasn't an exhibit. He took his one shoe off, put it on an empty plinth. People were walking past it, these art people going, oh, that's so clever, you know.
Smells so authentic.
How amazing this is.
And
this
warm
is
to the touch.
And warm to the... All right, let's bring on the man I've been waiting to see for ages because he's been all over the place. He was in America for a long time. And I'm thrilled that he's back in SA. He's got his own radio show again. And what would radio be without him? He is none other than Darren Scott. He is the radio DJ, TV host, and at Just Plain Twit on X. He's a household name in South African radio and television, having been in the business for 40 years. 40 years. The likes of Capital Radio, 5 FM, 702, East Coast Radio, OFM, Jacaranda FM. And now he has his own show on Hot 102.7 FM. How are you, dude?
I'm good. Nice to see you guys.
It's so lucky to see you.
Jesus, it's like a throwback.
It is, huh? And I said to Leanne, I was very, very tempted to bring in a little bit of Jack Daniels and a bit of passion fruit just to kind of get the old feelings going.
I heard that. So you're lucky because I would have brought my own in.
Oh,
well, first, no. I didn't know she was. I didn't know that you hadn't got rid of her full time. I didn't know she was still with you. She's like
this one.
She just sticks to you. I mean,
no, I've had to fight.
My sympathies.
I had to. She disappeared for a while. Mm. I had to fight to bring her back.
No one wanted her, so she came back. But you know what? I've had a couple of health challenges.
Alive.
This is my 38th year with my sixth melanoma.
You know how many people I've heard?
I've got two now.
Tell me, oh no, is Darren still alive?
Oh, yeah,
he's fucking strong like concrete.
I've had so many obituaries done already. I've read my own. I've heard about my own. But I had an interesting time in the States last year with Houston's the best medic for cancer. It's the best place in the world to be.
How many melanomas do you say you have?
I've been dealing with my sixth one, but they're always sixth. One, and they kind of either bounce around. So you get primaries and secondaries.
Oh.
And mine was a primary that bounced here and there.
Do you think you were just, you had like a kind of a genetic predisposition to it?
Or nothing in my family.
Spending time in the sun.
That's where it started. So I was a blood nut, a ginger, when I was younger, played cricket. Wear sunscreen.
Yes.
South Africa was terrible with that. No, yes. Not making people
aware. We used to
aware.
Just put like a... Yeah, stripe of zinc, but
that was,
maybe.
That was fashion for you
yeah.
guys.
Yeah.
And I used to play cricket a lot. That's yeah, in my sport. So obviously I've got a melanoma in my back, which I thought was just a little scar. My brother was a doctor. So, and he saw it one day, luckily, because it was very advanced. Had it taken out, and that was the start of a journey. It went from there into my groin, which is why I wear the stockings. This is not a fashion thing, by the way.
Oh, I didn't even notice. I thought you had just had perfect legs.
Two stockings.
On I thought leg. That you had perfect legs.
Thank you, Gareth. Are you hitting on me already? Such it's only 5 minutes into the damn thing. and then you asked, so some of them bounced around. This here, this my chin used to play the part of my neck, so they had to move something in there. There was one there.
Jesus, not man, you've been through just, the wars.
Some of them were serious, but the one thing I did, the very first one, I remember. After my first one, I had to go for checkups, and they found a lump in my groin.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Just
yeah.
one of my lymph nodes was swollen. I remember Roy Baines was a doctor, South African guy, went to school, same school, De La Salle, one of the best doctors South Africa ever produced. So obviously he was going to get snapped up by America or Canada, which he did. But that was right in the middle of my process with him. I was going to clinic, and he was the doctor that found this. Said, go and have it taken out. Let's do a biopsy. And when I went for the results, he'd left. And I had this other guy who basically would have made a very good Gestapo, Gestapo soldier or general. Mm-hmm. You know, a guy doesn't look at you sort of in his office. He does this all day. He like opens your file and then tells you, yeah, it's malignant. You need to have all your lymph nodes taken out. You need to have chemo and you have to have radiation. There's a nurse over there. She's got a schedule. Let's get it going. Sure. So I looked at this guy and I said, are you done? He said, yeah, just still didn't look at me. Got up, walked. Straight past the nurse, she said, you need to. I said, no, I don't. And I went home and told my mom, and she said, because I was 20, my first one's 86, 87, so I was 22, 23. And I told my mom, and she was obviously shocked, but I said to her, I said, I'm not doing this. I'm not doing chemo, radiation, not doing any of that shit. I saw what my grandmother went through when she had it. Something in me just said, that's not good stuff.
It isn't. It's poison.
It's poison. It's toxic, putting poison in your body. So I kind of defaulted automatically to that. My mom eventually convinced me, said, look, just kind of have the glands taken out. We'll take it from there. Her agenda was, we'll do it one step at a time.
Mm. Right.
I said, let me compromise. I said, okay. Had them all taken out, which is why I have nothing regulating here, which is why my leg is the way it is. And about a week after they were taken out, doctor arrived, my dad was there. Everyone was very happy. I'm lying in the hospital. I'm already hitting on the nurse. I think I dated her for about 3 weeks after that.
Of course you did.
And they came and said, no, prognosis is good. Your glands are clear. So I went, so why did they take them out? Why couldn't they like check first to see if there was anything in any of the others? Look, I can understand medicine wasn't as advanced then as it is now with CT scans and all this kind of stuff and PET scans. But I literally had these block dissection done for no reason at all.
Yeah.
And I've been wearing a stocking ever since because of it.
But
the one thing I did, no chemo, and I've refused chemo two more times. And I had one in my lung, which Greg Hammond took out in 2015. That was quite a big one in my aortic arch. Nothing. I would take immunotherapy, which I'm taking now.
Yeah.
But chemo, never. And I think one oncologist actually said to me when I went for a PET scan, they were shocked. This is after my fifth one.
But Darren, if you had that in your 20s,
yeah.
And you're here now looking as lively as you are.
Wow.
No, you are. And when I met you, you must have been what, 40?
Yeah, it would have been.
And
40,
you were the life and soul of the party.
Mm.
I had no idea that you'd already had cancer in your 20s and got through it without chemo and radiation.
Never let it bother me. I'd never let it.
This is an interesting thing, right? Like, what is it about a certain kind of medical professional that they just do the same old thing every time, hoping for a better result, and it never comes?
Yeah.
And the kind of people that they've essentially sentenced to death, who just hope and pray that they're doing the right thing, and then obviously no good result comes of it.
Yeah.
Like, you're the kind of, you're their worst nightmare, because you survive.
Yeah.
And you're there to tell the story. And it's not as if you don't have a voice that people listen to either. What do you think this is? Do you think it's a conspiracy against healthy
pharmaceutical
people?
Companies? So chemo is big business.
Right.
Okay. So immunotherapy came along and I started looking up on this. I wanted to get immunotherapy.
So what kind of immunotherapy? Because there are different kinds, right?
There are different types. So Keytruda is the one I'm on now. So immunotherapy, for anyone that doesn't know, it doesn't go into your body and poison half your body to try and kill the cancer.
Yeah.
What it does, it works with your immune system. So it's like basically they put this in you. It opens up where the cancer is, it targets it, and then with your immune system, it hits it. So right. I think sounds the way it was explained to me in the beginning, simplistically, it basically was something where you could now live with it. So it wouldn't spread. The whole idea was that it wouldn't spread. It would corral it and keep it in check. What they were finding, even in stage four, is it started shrinking it. And eventually people on stage four were cured.
That's phenomenal, because usually stage four is it's the end, right?
But it wasn't out there. Most people had to go on a trial to do it. Fucking expensive.
Yeah.
So the one I was on in the States was R500,000 a shot. And it was on trial, and there was a lot of pushback on this in the beginning, because obviously this is another way, apart from chemo, and they started using it in tandem with each other.
Right.
So now with mine, they said, but a chemo, and I said, I'll do the immuno, but I'm not doing the chemo. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a medical expert.
But you also, people don't realize, but you have the right to say, no, I'm not going to do that too, right? Yeah,
it's your right to decide, and that's what I did. So, not all doctors are the same. The one I'm working with now, he's so positive, very positive with immuno. And I just find doctors sometimes can be a little bit more, you know, when you go and see a doctor, when it comes to cancer, you just listen to whatever they say, because it scares the shit out of you.
Yeah,
so people just follow like sheep. Yeah. It's not like something else where you go, well, I don't want to do that. I'll try something else. So they just go down that road. And it affects everyone around them. It affects your state of mind. And a negative mind and a sort of defeatist outlook is the worst thing you can do for this thing. I just decided I'm not going to let this dominate my life. So I just put it behind me. I joke about it.
Yeah.
You know, I tell people about it.
But I think it's great that you do. I'm trying to think of
much the disappointment of some people.
Yeah. Why is it that I constantly meet people who say, like, yeah, I heard Darren's really sick. Hey, he's got 3 days to live. And I say to them, are you sure? Yeah. And then I find out from people that we mutually know that you're okay. And I go,
yeah, I'm fine. I had an issue in Houston because I started going on it there. And luckily, I got medical cover when I was there. So I wasn't paying for this stuff. But in about 0.000 whatever percentage of times, the immunotherapy, the one side effect is you can have immunotherapy and then be sitting on your patio having a bottle of wine later that evening, you know. You're fine.
Mm-hmm. That I like.
But in some cases, very rarely, it decides, your immune system decides, fuck you. Especially probably me that's going, you haven't put any chemo, anything in it, but you've relied on me.
Yeah.
And I've done a good job keeping this in check. Now you're putting shit in my body, in your body. So I'll show you. And it turned on me. My own immune system turned on me.
So this happened.
And that is fucking
dangerous. In Houston?
In Houston last year. Last year, this time I weighed 79 kilos. It hit me in my gastrointestinal area. I had colitis badly. And as much as the cancer treatment there is good, their GI people were terrible.
Oh.
And literally, I felt like I was dying.
Mm.
So I've found prednisone, which is a cortisone.
Yes. Yeah.
I walked a freaking golf course the other day. I'm normally on a cart. I found energy that I don't know where it came from. I think I was supposed to come off it about a month ago.
I love it. Hermine says,
not recommended at home.
Good for you. We need to revisit chemo. It has its place, but it's difficult to determine when it is used for the disease and when it's just sales.
All I can say, and a very good friend of mine, I found out last week, has cancer. I say to everyone, don't be afraid to get a second opinion or even a third. Yeah. Ask questions. Don't just go with it. Because what's good for one person might not be good for another. My son at one had chemo.
I remember.
When he had nephroblastoma. I'm not going to make a call on someone. And I thought, you know, kids are resilient. They go through everything, you know. I mean, the more kid picks up bacteria and stuff, the better it just builds the immune system. And when I spoke to Prof. Poole, who did his stuff, I mean, she's one of the top three in the world, I think.
Yeah.
I just looked at her face. I saw her eyes. And I said to her, what's the outlook here? And she said, you know, indignantly, I have a 95% record on this stuff. And I said, I was comfortable. I'm like, do what you have to do. It was hard to go through watching Mark have chemo for a year.
I'm sure.
A one-year-old.
Oh, it's a horrific thing now to do.
Hey? You know, slightly, he's not going to be as big as he could have been. But he's a little genius. He's happy. He's fantastic. So smart, and he's 100%. So, you know, you got to put everything in context. But for me, I would say ask questions. Don't just go what everyone says.
Well, I mean, listen, I'm very, very happy that you are not only intact but doing all of these things that you're doing. And it just seems like you're unstoppable.
I mean, like you do have this real love for living, and people love listening to you, and you've always been an absolute master storyteller. Are you having as much fun in radio as you were 40 years ago?
I'm still half retired. So when I went to the States, I retired. Yeah. My whole family, my kids.
I thought you'd stopped.
There with their mom. I did. At the end of 22, I decided I've got nothing more. Look, there were two stations I always wanted to work for. Capital, which is the first one. I mean, that was my ultimate. That's when I knew I wanted to do radio. And that one there, 5FM. That's that's one of our Christmas parties up north.
Well, I remember.
Yes.
Remember?
Yes.
Yeah. Or that's maybe when we interviewed Sugar Ray Leonard, actually, at Emperor's. But there were two stations I wanted to work for. I had to battle to get into Capital. And then basically every other station I was headhunted. And after that, I didn't really want to prove anything, but it's in you. So I retired. I thought, I've done everything I want to do. I'm going to go there. I'm going to be close to my boys. My girl's over in the States as well, 3 hours away in Houston. The boys are in Dallas. My dad's been in the States 41 years now.
Sure.
In Louisville. I've no people there. All my people are there. I didn't go there for the country. I went there for the people. I'd lived there once before. Houston, I found out very quickly, is like Brakpan on steroids. For anyone in Brakpan, forgive me, but that's what it is. Drinking, country music, trucks, guns.
Yeah.
And they have no interest in us whatsoever. Mm. And that kind of side didn't work out well. There were some issues with my ex and the boys and, just that side of things. My dad's got dementia now, so, it's hard to deal with as well.
Business. Mm.
And then Lloyd phoned me and said, listen, we're looking for someone to take over the drive show. Would you be keen? And I just went, funny you should mention that. I was sitting here living in a strange house on my own. I love South Africa, I didn't come here for the country. I can always fly over and see my kids.
Absolutely.
When the day comes again. And so I thought, I'll do it. So good. I'm still in retirement.
But you're having fun with it now.
That's all I'm doing now. It's the first time I've worked for salary in 25 years. I was chasing sponsors and stuff on my shows. And I got into the sort of sponsorship and getting my own people on board.
Now, I remember you had your own business for all of that too when you were still – doing the 5FM stuff.
And that paid the bills. It paid for the people that worked for me, except you. Obviously, you were employed by the SI car.
And my mess.
It was fun. Mm-hmm. And this time, I'm getting a salary. I have zero. I went over with two suitcases. I came over with two suitcases. I took all emotion out. I got rid of everything.
I just kept stuff amazing.
That I really wanted.
There's a lesson in that, too. Yeah. It's like people carry baggage that they don't have to carry. Hey?
And life is
so goddamn complicated as it is. Like, you don't know when something like cancer is going to rear its ugly head in your life. You don't know when a relationship is going to go super right or super wrong.
Yeah.
You don't know about these things. You can't guarantee against, there's no insurance against this stuff. It just happens. Mm. And you've got to either grab it by the horns and make it work or be a misery and just watch yourself decline and disappear. No, I absolutely love this.
Hello, by the way.
Yes.
I don't know if you ever put it on camera. I hope you don't.
Janine.
My old sons, this is all three people in my past 5FM history.
Yeah.
You, obviously, Gareth.
Yeah.
Mole. And then Janine Perkis, the producer. She was my producer at 5. Well, allegedly. And
soon to be fired producer,
I refer to. So, and I have a bone to pick with you.
Oh, my God.
Whose fucking side were you on?
Yeah.
With what?
In those days when she was around.
On hers?
Well, that was easy enough.
She
didn't even hesitate.
I've seen you once. The last time I saw you was when it was still Cliff Central.
Oh, yes, yeah.
We did that interview. And this is the next time I've seen you. So I didn't know then. But I found out afterwards.
Mm.
My coffee that she was getting me.
Yes.
Was made with what?
I don't know.
Breast milk.
No, from who?
Her. She was pregnant, having a child.
You are disgraceful.
She's a disgrace.
I remember that now, actually.
Freaking breast milk. Every time she's pissed off with me, she put breast milk in my coffee.
Yes, what a bitch.
Fuck.
Yeah, don't mess with the producers. James, I'm never going to ask you to make me any coffee.
Nothing foamy.
Well, I asked him about an hour ago, and I'm still waiting.
Yeah, James, bring the man something to drink, for God's sake.
Not you, Perkis.
Yeah, keep Janine the hell away from it. Now, I remember when I started at 5, which was
2002. Jesus.
No, couldn't have been.
You were like my last.
2002, 2003, somewhere around there. Anyway,
yeah.
I came in there and nobody wanted to know me at all. I was this loudmouth,
pain in the ass, noisy, fucking opinionated guy.
You were like a little know-it-all.
And the only person who made any effort with me was this guy here.
Yeah.
And I remember I sat because he did the show and I started after him. My first show was after.
Yes, you go into the back room and you were like, is he there?
And then we would sit and talk. And thank God for Darren. Otherwise, like, I don't think anyone would have spoken to me there for 3 years. And I wasn't particularly looking to make new friends either. But I remember you invited me one night. You were doing a gig somewhere. I went with you. And man, we hit like 100 fucking suitcases. Well, it felt like it.
You're welcome.
Suitcases and being the drink.
Suitcases were the Jack Daniels and passion fruit drink. Ugh. And I mean, you were the same with everybody. You were nice to everybody. You were nice to me. You made everyone laugh. You didn't take yourself too seriously. And I thought, out of all these people I've met in broadcasting and specifically there at the SABC, this is the only guy I actually want to spend any time with.
Mm.
And that was how many years ago?
That was 20 years ago. No, I'm talking just under 20 years ago.
So I think you... So thanks for that.
No, you're welcome. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it was like, you know, I knew you were coming because we went to Anthony Duke, the late Anthony
the smoke
Duke.
On the horizon.
The late Anthony Duke, God bless his soul and may he rest in peace. Mm. He was our station manager, and obviously I'd worked with him at Capital, so I knew Anthony very well.
Oh.
And we had a team building in Swakopmund.
Oh, yeah.
So, and I missed it because I was out until 6 in the morning and missed my flight. And I'd been given the thing, if you miss this flight, you will be fired. So everyone gathered at the airport. I had a nap and woke up like 5 minutes before the flight was supposed to go. So anyway, I managed to organize through my team that I had at my business at the time, a charter. And I almost got there before them.
Oh, wow.
If these little, these little 12-year-old pilots had been 20 minutes earlier at Windhoek where I landed on the SAA flight, I would have got there before them. And we all met at the dunes. So I rocked up at the dunes. How's it, everyone? And sitting on a deck chair underneath watching his minions bumboarding down the – were you there?
I don't know.
I don't know if he invited news.
there's a bit of trauma. I've blocked out.
So anyway, I walked in. Ant's like, hey, how's it? And then there's that 5-second dead silence. Like, what the fuck are you doing here? I said, I told you I'd be here. So we had one session about radio. It was just a jaw. One session about radio the next morning at the hotel. And the first thing Ant said, so it was me, Barney, Sasha, Ian, Alex was still there.
Yeah.
Paul Wright was still there. And he looked at us, he said, anyone that's over 30 here, you guys, this is your last year. You're done.
Jeez.
So there's silence. We all, Barney, myself, Phil, Alex, all looked at each other. And
well, I've got something to say to Anthony Duke, because you're still in radio, Barney's still radio, he's fucking gone.
No, but it wasn't Anthony. It wasn't Anthony. That was, remember, Randall had come in and taken over at the SA, and they wanted to make it back to a youth station. And Five's average age then was like nearly 30. You know, and that was done by design.
Probably good business.
And they
decision.
Wanted to make Metro that station, and Five was going to be the youth station. So it wasn't Anthony's call. Anthony was told he has to do this.
Mm-hmm.
I looked at Ant and said, hey, Ant, great team building, bud. You just shattered off your team. But we understood, and we did our last year. I knew that you had been brought in now to take over the drive show.
Yeah.
I knew that. So I knew you were taking over.
And you
over
were still
from
nice
me.
To me.
You
know, thank you.
You know, I was telling us we do some broadcast trading chats, and I did one on Saturday.
No, because there were some people who were absolute.
But you were intimidating to a lot of people as well, because you were on radio. You were on 702.
Mm.
This little, like, 18-year-old shouting the odds on politics and stuff. That intimidated a lot of people.
Yeah.
So they didn't know what they were getting, you know. I thought it was great. It was refreshing, you know. You normally got these old bullies and old news guys sort of sprouting about politics and stuff. And he has this kid from Pretoria, Sutherland Boys High or something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Shouting the odds, you know, about politics and making sense. So it intimidated people. I think that's what maybe scared little of them. I don't think it was anything to do with your personality.
Well, who knows?
Yeah, who knows?
I mean,
who cares?
Bygones, right? But we had that studio, and there was always insanity going on there, because I do feel, and I don't want to be too nostalgic, and I think everybody always thinks this, but I think we got like the very best kind of overlap between the modern digital phenomenon that we're in now and the old school radio stuff, which you would have known a lot better than me.
Mm.
I mean, those guys at Capital, for example.
Thank you.
I mean, these were the people who, these were radio celebrities on a scale that we'll probably never have again, because radio people are like, they're a little bit odd.
They're a little bit weird. There's nothing wrong with
I'm
that.
Testing I'm testing sure. the coffee. Yeah.
Janine had nothing to
it
do with it.
Went past her. She might have.
Okay. But you know what I mean? It's like that we got a little bit of that old school radio where it was all down to like the big voice and the ability to paint pictures with words and all of that kind of theater of the mind stuff that used to be what radio was.
When anoraks were about.
But I don't think it's that never had to change.
Well, that's still a part of it. There's a golden thread there. But it used to be that was people's entire entertainment offering.
Yeah.
And the personalities had to be able to do a million different things. Mm. So you had to know a bit about news. You had to be able to make funny jokes. You had to be able to engage with the person who was doing the sport or the traffic or whatever and make it useful and interesting. The commercial element of it was all very, very important too.
Interviews.
And then this digital stuff came along and it kind of just cheapened a lot of that. It took away the magic in some ways. And I don't want to sound like an old, boring, nostalgic person, but that's what it did. That's why when people still say to me, and I can't believe it because I don't think about it, but when people say to me, oh, we miss your show on whatever station, and I go, how can you? It's like it's been 11 years.
Yeah.
And people must do that with you as well.
Yeah, people still think I work at another station I worked with like 15 years ago, you know. Like the most miserable time in my career, 40 years. And this is no reflection on the people I worked with. When you're in the studios, you know that old thing about leave your baggage outside, including if you hate management. But Jacaranda was horrible.
Yeah.
It was horrible. It was just, you know, I was brought in for a reason, shake things up here. English boy coming to an Afrikaans station. And I did, you know. And
you gave them the results they wanted?
They were getting the results they wanted, but there were certain people that didn't like it because also my advertising, I was one of the top five agencies there for a long time. Had some big clients that came there because I was there.
Mm-hmm.
And they just suddenly didn't like it, but that was the deal I joined on. So there was a lot of banging of heads with certain people in management, a lot of micromanaging going on. Alan Kahn was the most amazing manager to work for. He was being micromanaged via head office.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a miserable time. The only happy time when I walked in that studio, closed the door, didn't have to deal with him. You know, and then I had Diane, Frankie, all those people. Absolutely amazing. And then obviously there was Walland who was like hanging on.
Shame Walland. He's still around, eh?
Yeah, he's still going. I don't know where he is, but he's still going. You know, and that was such, and we had such some of my best radio I've done, and more people still, and Afrikaans people as well, you know. It's a hard market to walk into. Mm-hmm. I think I managed it right by acting like the dumb Engelsman.
Yeah, you said something now that I totally understand and identify with. It's like the best time you could have is when you close that studio door and you can ignore management and it's just about you and whoever's listening.
Yeah.
And then you can be yourself, you can have fun, and you know that they're going to come through the door at the end of the show or you're going to have to see them in the passage afterwards. Jesus. And they're just going to ruin your day. And I mean, I used to take that on air sometimes, which is not always the best idea. I mean, I just say terrible things about management.
But while you were with under that management.
I would say during contract negotiations, I'd say the most terrible things. And they didn't know what to do with it because then they'd threaten me and tell me if I talk about this, they're going to fire me. And then I'd go on the air the next day.
But you must have known they would never because to a certain point where you're at the radio station, they can't afford to. Like at 5.
I don't know.
It's been a long time where they would have gone, we can't get this guy.
We were doing so well and they still wanted to tinker with it though. There's always a certain crowd of people. And I think it happens in every business, but in radio, it's so much more magnified because you don't have a relationship with management if you're a listener. You don't know who they are.
Yeah.
And mostly you don't want to. Mm. They're fucking horrific people.
Yeah.
But in every business, there's a level of people who interfere, who are neither the kind of visionaries who create the stuff, nor are they the people who connect you to it.
Yeah.
They're just in the way at every turn. They need to carve out their little bit of why they're important, and they just ruin things for other people.
Yeah, absolutely. And they manage radio that way. A lot of them have never sat in the studio.
No.
They don't know what it feels like. They don't know what spontaneity is. Mm-mm. I mean, they were hiring these consultants. People that don't know radio, they have these Australians, always Australian consultants, who know fuck all about our culture. They get stuff from another country, bring it here and try and plug it into your show. And then that's how they justify their existence. And these people are, I mean, they had one guy at East Coast, Peter G. He's a
nice guy, sure. Never going to be a big superstar, but they had him on Breakfast there. And I was doing my Jacaranda. I was doing two shows,
yeah, Drive you were and doing Breakfast. A simulcast in there.
Breakfast and Drive, Jacaranda East Coast. So I used to do my Drive, my Breakfast show in Durban when I used to go and do Supersport.
That has
I
to had be, a lot of jobs. You have to be the time. Only person, in, certainly in South Africa, but possibly even internationally, who did a morning and an afternoon show.
There was a guy, in fact, the first I heard of it, which is kind of what inspired me to go, let me give this a bash. It was a guy, and I'm not sure if it was Seacrest, actually.
He could have been. He was a workaholic. He
was doing a show in Dallas and a show in Chicago.
Sure.
Same day.
Jesus.
Before, long before I did that. But I thought, let me give it a go. It's another, you know, challenge. And it was hard work.
I'm sure. It must have been exhausting.
I was in a death spiral of depression, apparently. Loving the shows and stuff. But the psychologist I saw once, he said, you're in a deep depression. You need to rest your body. That's how I was doing super sport as well. Oh, and living at Hearty's.
Oh, my God. No, that's
and
too
running
much.
A business. So there was just so much going on.
Okay, so when did Leanne become – when did she develop the drinking problem? Was it with
me.
You?
That was you. Okay. It was all me. I think because it was your wedding.
I remember I took over Leanne from you in the afternoons, and then we thought we'd take her to the mornings. And I kind of started feeling responsible for her at a certain point, even when I was doing the news myself at 6 because she wasn't there. Because she'd been out drinking the night before.
You'd allowed it to go too far.
No, I'm sorry. It was my fault.
No
You're
fucking
right.
responsibility for it.
Yeah, that. I'd allowed it to go too far. It was it was me.
Yeah. Do you remember that there's one day always
don't
reminds
me. They're all cherubic. Pretend that you have nothing to do with this.
I'm just listening. It's not my fault.
She has changed from those days, though.
Really?
Yeah, I think you did that, not me.
Better or worse.
I always think about her one day, not that I never ever think of you on purpose, but one day always reminds me of you. What day is that?
My wedding day?
No, why would I remember your wedding day?
the day you set my news on fire?
No, that was every second week. I mean,
plastic spiders at me during 9/11. Yes, of course.
There's two shows that I will always mark as two of my best shows of radio. I enjoyed it.
Happened in front of our eyes.
One was getting to interview Nelson Mandela on sport for an hour. And the other one was 9/11 because I drove in just after the first, or as the first plane had just gone in.
Yes.
And I was told, there was speculation it was a light aircraft. It was an accident.
Yes, yes.
And then when I got to the studio, CNN was on. You were sitting there pale, and then we realized there was something else, and we watched the second one go in.
Yeah.
Because we went in as CNN were on air. And that's where everything changed. We literally changed the entire show, format of the station, everything. Mm. And Leanne and I just kind of, without discussing it, just clicked into it, which is like breaking news stuff. This news coming out of here, that news coming out of there.
You remember it?
Absolutely.
Oh, it was the
most. Absolutely.
And afterwards, I remember putting together all the clips we got during the show. Supertramp. It was a Supertramp song, From Now On, I think. I don't know why that song came to my head, but I just did this live. I played it. We had a mini disc with all these clips that I put together during the show. And I just played some of these clips in the gaps between the vocals.
My God.
And it was goosebump stuff. And that was at the end of the show. I drove home. I was like on a cloud, you know.
Yeah.
It was just the most surreal day.
It was so surreal.
Yeah. That day, I always remember.
I won't forget it. I think it's one of those occasions that people always go, well, where were you when that happened? Because I think for our generation, it was, you know, maybe for one or two generations before, it might have been when Kennedy was shot.
Yeah.
You know, where were you then? The moon landing might have been another one. But I think that these are the things that kind of mark the passage of time for people and that give people their context in history. I'm trying to think of what it might be in the last couple of years. I mean, COVID, I think, is a fair contender.
It's a big one. But people aren't going to go, where were you when COVID hit? You know, you were sitting at home for two fucking years.
You knew what you were
saying. Unnecessarily, as we found out afterwards.
Exactly. You know, completely unnecessarily. So,
and some people also walking around with some strange conditions. Unnecessarily, as it turns out.
Oh,
afterwards.
Listen, my favorite ones are the ones I saw. I saw a person the other day in the shops who had a mask on. I thought, what the hell's wrong with you? I mean, I understand if you were doing this in March of 2020, even by June of 2020, maybe. Yeah. And then they made these stupid rules. But if you're still doing it in 2024, almost 25.
Nah. When you're driving in your car,
you go to the shrink.
Thing in my bag.
A mask.
But that's because I'm visiting family members in hospital.
Uh-oh.
So I'm like,
yes, oh my God. Of course it is.
No, but also, you're a hypochondriac. No, you are.
To wear these.
You're in your car with your mask on. Go on.
Yeah, and you love it. We know you. She was the one I was talking about just now, the mask on.
Well, the next one's going to be, which one of the five assassination attempts on Trump were you? What were you?
Yeah. Well, exactly. Apparently, there was a third one. Well, no, yeah. Close, this weekend. What are your feelings on that? Because you've spent a bit of time in America.
Well, I mean, obviously, I've got vested interest because my kids are there and this is now their future. You know? So I fear that if it carries on the way it has the last 4 years, because the amazing thing has happened here. You know, I send my kids over to have opportunity there. You know, you worry about what they're going to do when they finish here and stuff. And having come back and lived there and seen, experienced obviously what's, you know, just how things have changed so much in so many ways. I see South Africa as 2 decades ahead of that country in terms of divisiveness, relations between its citizens.
Yeah.
We are decades ahead. We have got it, you know, we know we were going to go through pain, but we've got to that point where, you know, we are just one people. Mm. I think our rugby team has done a lot for that as well and how that's, you know, that's kind of
going to ask accelerated you about that. Yeah,
a bit.
Sure.
I think what Rusty did there, I know Rusty very well, and what he did there was genius. It's the last arc I would have expected it from, but he just got it right. Where everyone's been trying to do this for decades, you know, but everyone's had their little agendas. They were trying to look after their own. And there they deliberately are so partisan and they use divisiveness as a way to push that. There's going to be a lot happening in the next 3 weeks before that election.
Oh, yeah.
But I think the only person that can actually, it sounds weird, this is my opinion, the only person that actually bring normality and some sanity back to that country is Donald Trump. He's not a stupid man.
No, I agree.
He's not a stupid man. He doesn't communicate well. He communicates like a bull in a china shop, and that puts a lot of people off. So, like his whole thing about Springfield, they're eating cats, they're eating dogs.
Mm-hmm.
That is not done by mistake. He's done that on purpose because you know what? The next day after that debate, no matter what people say, who won and Kamala Harris won, the next day, what were people talking about?
Donald Trump eating dogs, eating cats.
Yeah. He took the oxygen again. Right. It's exactly what he did in 2016. That's what he does all the time. He just keeps the focus and the oxygen.
Yeah.
I think
he's a master communicator.
Yeah.
And there are always people I have criticizing me for, you know, when I say that whatever you think of Trump, however he makes you feel, is almost completely irrelevant. You're watching someone who is a master of communications in a realm of politics where up to now, bullshit artists have been the best at it, right?
Yeah, well, he's not a politician.
And that's no, he's not. Thing. That's what I think is so refreshing. And America's been asking for this since the 60s. Oh, what would it be like if we didn't have a Democrat or a Republican? What if we had someone who wasn't a professional politician? And now they get their wish come true and they shit themselves. They don't know what to do with it. I think that you're right about South Africa, though. This place,
you know,
and listen, you also had your shit while you were here and people trying to, you know, lambaste you, label you, call you X, Y, and Z, and make your life hell. And for a while, I'm sure they did.
In fact, it wasn't
now,
that long.
You're full of optimism.
You know what I found is that, and I mean, kudos to you. And straight after that whole episode, you fresh.
Yeah.
And I obviously heard by the by while I was trending number 2 worldwide. I think I was ahead of Kim Kardashian. That week. You know why, though? There was a guy in the UK, a DJ in the UK, well, very well known, called Darren Scott. Mm. And he was getting lambasted by everybody.
Oh,
he kept going, he's a gay DJ in the UK.
Yeah, it was very funny. The guy's life.
I eventually sort of followed, to lighten my day, I was following his Twitter feed.
Poor guy was putting out fires.
Because I was laughing because he was so funny the way he handled it, but he was putting out fires for a week. And that's why I was trending worldwide.
Okay.
They thought it was him. But I found that South Africans are the most, well, first, if they know you and know who you are, they're the most forgiving people. But there's also some South Africans, certain sectors of South Africa that latches on because they saw that as a positive. They had an ally in this, you know, what happened.
To this
day, I still have people that start and I just go, buddy, you don't know me. You stop right there, you know.
I
agree with what happened. And they are like a little comment.
I like
comment,
that you
know?
Called people that.
And for me, those are the people that hang on. I'm not saying it's general. It's just you get a certain sector of people. But I mean, I just found that it didn't take long to reflect on it. You know, and as I said at the time, no matter what the context of it was, and there was a lot of context, a lot of backstory as to why that happened and how it happened.
Also, but, you know, like most of these things, when you actually get into it, it's not as sexy or big a story. But people on social media don't care about that.
Yeah.
Are you, I know you got your ex account. Are you,
no, it's gone. Are you, long time. So you're not active on Twitter. I've been on Twitter for about 10, 11 years.
So I went off and I've kind of reluctantly come back this year. We're doing all kinds of new and cool things. And also it's a great place to interact with people. But I'm very judicious now about where I climb in and where I don't.
Mm.
And I think it's different now. I think most of the dust has settled.
Yeah.
But man, for a while there, it was not a pleasant place.
After the Elon takeover?
Well, I think after Elon took over, it gave people pause to maybe give it a second chance.
Yeah.
And Elon again, I mean, look at what that guy did just last week. And there are still people who insist. I saw some stuff yesterday. I'm like, someone who works in a bank is busy telling everyone on the internet what an idiot Elon is.
Yeah.
I feel like going,
you just,
how many rockets have you put into space?
And his next rocket is just docked somewhere successfully. Yeah.
It's just the most unbelievable thing. The hubris of some people that they think, I'm the same as Elon. In fact, Elon's a bit dumber than me. I'm going to go online and tell everybody how dumb he is. You have to have big brass balls to get that right, huh?
It's a narrative. People follow narratives there all the time. It's crazy.
So,
but yeah, I mean, I just wanted to say that since coming back, while arrows, you know, if you look at it like a dashboard of a mini with all those things with arrows and round dials, I see South Africa and countries that way. And at the moment, America's dials are going all over the place.
Yeah, yeah.
South Africa's dials are starting to go all in the same direction.
Which is very good news.
I mean, if you walk the streets, driven the streets and had a look how clean they are.
It's getting better.
It's way better.
No, I think we hit our low point somewhere around 2015, 16.
Yeah.
I think that was where we were at our absolute worst ebb. And I think everything since then, and it's not just the tangible things, the fact that we now actually have a bit of electricity on, which is, makes a difference. It's
ended the day I arrived back. It was the last load shedding.
Really?
So you guys are welcome.
So you brought it back.
I brought it. Okay, I wanted to know
who to thank. And there I was. There I was thinking it was, you know, the guys
in Tetuanyati
and those guys. No, it's not them, obviously. It's so funny. I was reading a new book that Zelda, Madiba's PA, has just written because she's coming on the show on Wednesday.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. And I mean, most of the book is about her getting into shit on Twitter.
Yeah,
I remember that. I think about this as like, that was just a stage, almost like COVID was. It was a stage in our evolution as humans where we were coming to grips with this technology and we weren't ready for it.
Mm.
People were just, there's still people who are not ready for it, even though some of us have moved past it and carried on with new things. It does amaze me, though, that we end up having conversations about stuff. And for you, this must be really frustrating in some ways. Radio, you said earlier, storytelling hasn't changed. The ability to connect with people hasn't changed. You have that talent. It's an ability that very few people really naturally have. And you worked on that, but you also just, there was natural ability there. What do you think it is that pulls you back to radio? Because you also could have and have in many situations in your life decided I'm done with this now. What kept you coming back?
I fell in love with radio, with Capital. I think that's when I really knew I loved it. I mean, I think there's a picture of me I gave to your producer
from Capital,
me standing in my bedroom before I started on radio. This is there.
Wow.
That was me as a kid at school. Okay. I'm wearing clothes at the bottom as well, by the way.
Oh, okay.
I have got pants.
I was going to ask where you found that.
So that's all the Capital Radio DJs.
I had pictures.
I had my charts on the wall.
Look at that.
Was my little studio, my Philips twin tape hi-fi. Used to play around on that. That was before I got into Capital. This is when I got to know Kevin Savage and Shame. God bless Jan, his wife, passed away yesterday. So,
oh, I'm sorry.
So they're together now drinking wine somewhere in heaven. And I just fell in love with radio. And then Capital came and said, that's what I want to do. So I was listening on the way in. And fuck me if that guy wasn't telling my story, the doctor.
Really?
That's exactly my story. I eventually ended up going to study medicine for the first year at Tuckies because my brother was a doctor. And I did a semester, wrote my exams, and while I was busy studying for zoology, my brother walked into my room and said, what the fuck are you doing? So I found campus radio. I worked at Radio Tux, which is a feed into the canteen.
Yeah.
There's no FM or anything.
And he came and he said, I spent more time in the radio station's little house there than I did at lectures. And I was cramming in this thick zoology book, and I hadn't opened it, I think. I went to the minimum amount of lectures. And my brother walked into my room the night before the exam and said, what the fuck? Well, he didn't really swear much, but basically, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah.
I said, I'm studying for the exam tomorrow. He says, you don't want to do this. He said, listen, close the book, go to sleep tomorrow, get in his VW Beetle, his blue one, mm-hmm. and drive me back to Joburg, back home. Knowing that my mom and dad were going to freak. So I did that. I closed the book.
Without a plan B.
I felt this weight come off my shoulders. I got through half this book, and it's like, I was fucked. And the next morning I woke up, and for some reason I said to him when he came to my room, I said, listen, let me go and write the exam, and then we can go. He said, okay. I wrote the exam. I got 77 for it.
Oh, that's not bad.
Bloody hell. Sure. Okay.
The questions must have come from the first half of the book. So I passed that. I passed physics, and I scraped through chemistry, I think. I didn't write two others and got left. And I got home. My brother said, leave it to me. You just go and chill. I'll deal with mom and dad.
Jeez,
and he did.
That's
my
great
dad,
of him.
My dad, too, well, until he got dementia, he apologized to me every single time he saw me.
Oh, really?
Saying, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. So, wow. And I was listening to him tell the story about that whole thing about parents and, you know, feeling apologizing for what you choose to do, the guilt. Mm. And my brother took all the guilt away.
Well, medicine's loss was our gain.
Yeah.
So I'm very happy.
And I went down that path. So just been a love story. I've just, you know, it's been, I've only applied at one station, and every other station I've gone to, the others were just as long as I could have fun. So getting out of Jacaranda was great.
Mm.
And having that break for a while and started the online thing just before you guys
did.
You guys got it
right. Balls.
It was hard work, but we had fun. Ask Janine.
Yeah, you know what? I think that you're such a massive personality. You're also such an important part of the history of kind of media in this country. And it's just very, very special for me that you managed to make time to come and sit with us today.
Anytime, bud. Because I don't feel that. I just feel like it's just fun for me. I love waking up knowing I'm going to do a radio show.
No, I appreciate that. I know you wouldn't say something you didn't mean, which also is true for very few people. But it's really cool to just spend time with someone who has this deep and abiding history and love for the medium of audio. For television too, you look at all the things you've done in TV, which we didn't even touch on.
I hated it.
Sport. You hated TV.
I never wanted to do TV.
How weird is that?
I got dragged in.
All three of us hate TV.
That's at the Capital Radio Studios where I got the job. I was busy getting Kevin Savage. There I was 20. It was just 1920.
Jesus.
Yeah. But I never wanted to do TV. I got conned in by Manu Pariachi.
Yeah? I remember Manu.
Can I tell the story very quickly?
Go for it.
So when Mnet started, they're obviously working on really archaic equipment, reels with movies and stuff. And obviously things go wrong.
Sure.
So when things go wrong, technicians have to do their bit, but it could take 5 to 10 minutes. They wanted people who could sit in this little box studio the size of your guest toilet here and talk while they fix their tapes.
Absolutely. I remember that.
Who do they go to? DJs. So they went, and obviously it was aimed at a white Afrikaans English market. So they went to 702 and they went to Capital to look for presenters. Couldn't use 5 because it was SABC. And so Mike Mills, Manu Pariachi, Kevin Savage.
David O'Sullivan?
David didn't do that. No, David came much later.
Okay.
Paul Freedy, Paul West.
Yeah, okay.
Guys like that, 702 Capital. Everyone auditioned. They said to me, I said, I'm not interested. Okay, I want to do radio. I'm not interested in TV. I love going to work in shorts.
Yeah.
Not having to comb my hair. I don't want any other people to rely on.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And,
so now twist my arm to get me to do any of this visual stuff. I hate it.
So eventually Manu came in one day after about asking 7 times of me saying no. He said, look, they want to start a sports channel. And they knew that I knew a bit about sports. So just go and do a screen test with an eye to doing sport.
Yeah.
So I reluctantly said, okay, I'll go and do it. And I went in on a Saturday morning wearing a rugby jersey to fit the part. And I arrived, there were 50 people there. They were definitely not there for sport. And then Ralph Mogridge, this very, very camp producer, amazing guy, such an awesome guy, came mincing down the passage straight for me, says, hi, Darren, welcome. So glad you finally decided to do this. Here's your script for the audition. I opened it up. The only fucking sport in there was yachting. There was Loving. There was Dynasty. There was some B-grade movie. There was a whole lot of My Little Pony and Friends.
Continuity stuff.
It was. And I thought, fuck it, I was going to leave. And he said, no, just come and do the audition, then you can go. Then you've done it, and you're done. So I thought, okay, I walked in and I took the absolute piss.
Absolute piss.
And they loved it.
It was my best stand-up I've ever done. And I've only done stand-up once. That was it. And I walked out of there, and the controller, Andre Engelbrecht, two Afrikaans, Andre and Vicky, were fucking pissing themselves laughing. They were rolling on the floor. And Andre said to me, he says, we'll see you soon. I said, no, you won't. Walked out of there, get freaking makeup taken off, makeup artist. We'll see you in 2 weeks. I bet you. I said, no, you won't. Got the call on the Monday.
That's awesome.
And I did continuity for 2 fucking years, Gareth.
I remember
introducing
seeing
My
on
Little
TV.
Pony and Friends. Eventually, they want the Afrikaans head of production at the time. Once they did a cull and they got rid of half the presenters, he wanted me gone as well. I was supposed to go.
Yeah.
And then Rob Orpen said, give him to me. And that's when MNET Supersport started.
Right.
And then I was the slut of Supersport. I did everything.
Well, I don't know that there was a Supersport for very many people without you in it for such a long time. And I mean, there are comments here about people who say that you were still the best guy who ever did sport on TV.
But you know why it was different? Because that's I cool. said, if they got me the job based on how I auditioned, I'm going to stay like this. So right. I never took it seriously.
Well, here's Quentin. He says, I'm a Namibian, so my only connection to Darren was his time on Supersport. And to this day, he is still the best and real rugby pundit and best presenter they've ever had.
Thanks, buddy.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's true. And I mean, there's still things that are missing from the local lingo that started while you were there with, but on the other hand, Darren and all that sort of thing that Lars used to. I mean,
I'll live with that.
People still ask me about you, and I say, I'm sure he's absolutely fine. And I have to check with Janine. Yeah, he's fine. But it's lucky to see you, man.
It's so good to see you guys, thank man. You. It's like, that was such good memory seeing you and just also thinking about it and thinking about old times coming and like hearing you on the.
I mean, she's still going there. Strong. Huh?
Still going.
Yeah. Still there. Still don't look a day over 40.
Oh, thank you.
Say something nice. But thanks all for right. having me. It's great to see you guys here.
Lovely. Darren Scott, what well. A pleasure. And don't miss his show on Hot 102.7 FM. And he's still doing all the stuff that you want him to do, except he's not on Twitter.
No. Facebook only.
Facebook only.
I've become a mother.
There we go. Don't worry, all the mothers are taking over Facebook anyway.
Listen, Facebook is still the highest growing social media platform in South Africa, still to this day. Growing.
Okay.
Yeah.
You go there, Mr. Zuckerberg.
There we go. All right, everybody. We will see you on Wednesday. Have an awesome day. Ciao.
Don't give up, Stinky. My dad says, if you never give up and work hard, all your dreams will come true.
That's the gayest shit I ever heard.
What?
I don't believe your pappy. May be rich, but he ain't happy. Tells you about work and you want to be him. But when's the last time you got to see him? He works hard. Why? So you can go out and buy a bunch of shit that you don't need. Driven by your punk ass hopes and greed. That's why I say, fuck it. For the first time.